And, you know, he just come in and smooth it all out. And I said, yeah, that's what we got to do. But I think that they're realizing now, and I don't know if they're realizing the whole potential that was that's always been out there in the Chicano community. I think they're realizing to a point that by letting us become politically sophisticated within ourselves and by ourselves, that we've just given them more muscle. Hey, guy, you want to talk?
No.
You don't want to talk?
I do, Daddy. I want to talk.
Okay.
Atypical of the other counties and cities that are African American. Mm-hmm. Same thing's happening in other places.
This is happening. What's happening now is happening only in Travis County.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, it's the only place that it's happening, and we have a real hard time in Corpus. And the only time we can get cooperation out of the other Chicanos in the state is when Castillo goes out to do it. When he goes out to do it, then they all fall in line. Anybody else goes out to do it, I go out to do it, I get my ass cut up. They won't work because of the young thing, you know. The old and LULAC type Chicano legislators just, you know, automatically feel threatened. Right off the bat, come up with, you know, this summit. I had a big fight with Hector Garcia a few months ago, because I went into the county. I was on the reapportionment committee. I went to the county and redrew the single-member district lines and drew them to a great extent in favor of Chicanos. I drew them who we could have. I drew them who we could have two Chicano legislators out of Nueces County. And in Nueces County, you only got about, you got about 57% of the population. But it's not that big of a county. If there's 200,000 people in the county, then that's
what city is it?
Corpus Christi. But I went in there and did that. You know what would have helped them? It's just making two would have made it possible for two Chicanos to get elected. One of the districts was 67% Chicano, and the other one was 56%, which was good because we're using 1970 census information. Hell, by now, that 50-some-odd is 60-some-odd, and that 60-some-odd is close to 80. And they have a lot of white flight in that area, too, that we experience here in town. And I went and did that, and Hector Garcia just, I don't like it. I don't like it at all, because he didn't have any input into it, and it was my mistake. You know, I should have involved him and stroked him and all that shit. But, you know, I was just not used to that. I didn't have that kind of experience. And boy, they just resented the hell out of me. And the problem is, with doing that organization within that county, they either have to do it themselves, or Castillo has got to go in there to do it. Now, if he goes in there, boy, they just fall in the line and they start doing this and doing that, whatever he wants done.
Is he doing more and more of that?
More and more, yeah, definitely. After the state convention, he's just...
Would he be considered one of the few statewide Mexican-American leaders? Are there any such people identified as...
He's got, I don't know, it's a charisma, it's a damn political intelligence that the guy's got, it's just the damn practical intelligence the guy's got. It's the go that he's got, it's the energy that he's got that kind of ties those conservatives to the liberals, the Chicano conservatives to the liberals. He can go and sit down and talk to Tina Villanueva, who's a big Tower supporter, big Republican, and boy, she loves the hell out of him. She'll just turn that whole county in favor of Castillo for any damn. He can go and sit down with Paul Montemayor, the guy that heads up the steelworkers in Texas, the Chicano steelworkers. He's on the national level now. Very influential with the steelworkers movement, the labor movement. He can go sit down with that guy, and that cat will give him whatever the hell he wants. If he needs $5,000 for voter registration, if he needs $5,000 for a campaign and $10,000 for voter registration, whatever you want to do, he'll go with it. He likes to be stroked. He likes to have Castillo come in there prior to doing anything and telling him and sitting down with him and say, here's what we want. He can go and sit down and talk to the labor people that are tied to the labor unions in the state, the AFL-CIO. Sit down and talk with those guys and get them to go against the AFL-CIO and support him. I mean, he's the only guy that can do all of that and then go and sit with the white liberals and tie them into the whole thing. I think he's probably the most formidable Chicano candidate statewide. And he's also the guy that goes out to Richmond. I don't know if you know where Richmond is. It's a little community outside of Houston. And organizes Chicanos on a Sunday afternoon. You know, even after he's done all of the kind of statewide work that he does, going to a little town like Richmond that to a lot of people is insignificant, and that little population there will never have any effect, you know, on the total, or we think will never have any effect on the total political scene of the state. But he'll go in there and organize and show them how to organize and talk to them about precinct organization. And he'll go into Bay City and do the Golden Triangle. Do all of that kind of stuff that an organizer should be doing for him. He does it himself. So that, you know, all of that tied into where he's at probably put him in the best position to become the statewide candidate for the Chicano community statewide leadership. I don't see anybody else close to him unless, of course, Henry B. But then the liberals won't even talk to Henry B. And Dr. Garcia, who's supposedly the big honcho in Corpus Christi, won't talk to Henry at all. They've had a running feud over bilingual education for as long as anybody can remember. Joe Bernal and San Antonio and Henry B. just hate each other's ass because Henry B. got Joe cut up in that Senate race out there. Albert Pena and Henry B. are the same way. So that Henry B. would and is very strong in his area, but I don't think he'd be statewide as strong as Castillo.
Well, he doesn't do anything statewide either, does he?
Mm-hmm. No.
We talk about La Raza Unida. How do you assess it since its beginning? Where is it now? Has it leveled off?
I think it's, you know...
Were you involved with it in the beginning?
No, never was. Oh, most of their people... Most of their people that know anything about politics were involved with us in the beginning and in the Castillo thing. I guess they're at the point of now where the Socialist Workers Party was right after their second election statewide. They've isolated themselves to a great degree and are away from the political mainstream. Completely. So the position that they're in right now is one in which we're picking up the people that want to participate, that want to continue moving in politics, that have seen that, you know, that's not the route. One of the main reasons that they put themselves in that box, in that position where they were isolated, was the fact that this last campaign they couldn't get any of the Chicano elected officials in the state to move over into the party. You know, we didn't do it because we were looking at 41% of the Democratic Party supporting a Chicano candidate. We didn't do it because we were looking at 20 or 30 years of work getting Chicanos to vote within the Democratic Party so we could help get Chicano officials elected. We didn't do it because the elected people that we've gotten elected to this point were within the Democratic Party. The biggest problem was that they couldn't get Chicano elected officials to go over there, and then they went and took on the most liberal of the liberals. The Chicano candidates they took on were the guys with the heaviest liberal credentials almost in the legislature.
Why did they do that?
I guess because they were trying to be practical as far as their politics was concerned, and that was they were trying to establish a base. And they're practically the base that they would go after would be a Chicano community. Of course, that's where the Chicano liberals went. That's where they came from. I think they made mistakes. They made mistakes in taking on those guys, but for trying to establish that base that they need. I think they made real mistakes in taking on those guys that were already elected and the guys that had a chance to be elected. I think there was a number of positions in South Texas, like, and I don't know any more about why they did it, other than I think that they were looking for a base and you know, practical base for them to go after, is the Chicano community, Chicano single member districts. But there were positions in South Texas, like the district in Del Rio, 76% Mexican American. They didn't go after that. The district in Hidalgo, guy held by Felix McDonald. He didn't even have an opponent. It's 72, 70 some odd percent Chicano. A district outside of Victoria, Bloomington.
You got a legislative house district?
House district, see. This is where they ate themselves up. They went after those Chicano liberals that were. They went after those Chicano liberal districts. Well, hell, they were already held by people like myself. People like Barrientos and Carpus, I mean, in Austin, who, hell, this was the first time that we'd ever gone that far with the Chicano in Travis County, and he had a goddamn right-wing conservative Republican running on his ass, and also a Chicano running for La Salida against him. I had a Chicano running against me here in the city. And he pumped all of their money into those races. It was a fantastic amount of money. They pumped about $12,000 into my opponent's race. And they pumped about, hell, if not that much more, into the guy in Austin. And really what it did, it backfired on him. Backfired completely. Because I had a lot of supporters of mine that the first time around voted for Ramsey. Well, when those guys came to run against me, guys like John Hernandez lives down the street, just got pissed off at him. Said, "You son of bitches, y'all are trying to get to where we're at now. Y'all are trying to get a representative elected, and we've already done it. Why the hell you want to do that?" The guy has worked and got them mad, got that guy mad, got people all over the place. People over on the other side just totally turned off and said, "The heck with those bastards, they ain't going nowhere." And got them to where they were mad at him. You know, reversed the whole thing on him. Got them to where those people worked their asses off in my campaign and Gonzalo's campaign in Travis County was better, man. I mean, they beat the shit out of some people over there. Chicanos beat the hell out of some Las Unidas people over there. It just backfired on them. It made the Chicanos that were active in politics that weren't political technicians or political analysts in any way, just Chicanos that voted and Chicanos that worked in campaigns, got them all pissed off at it. You've got the political people that last time around supported Ramsey. It got them mad at not only them that were running against us, but the whole party.
And so the 74 campaign pushed them out of the mainstream?
Completely.
You think their result of that election, their influence is diminished?
Yeah. They.
What has their existence meant for anybody? I mean, specifically the Democratic Party. Have they helped open up the Democratic Party?
No, I don't.
What
think
have
so.
They done?
Not at all. They've never addressed themselves to the, to opening up the party. If that had been, if that had been a viable group, if that had been a group that was after changing the party, then they would have had some effect in that area. They didn't.
But
hasn't opened up.
Did the fact of their existence, though, as an alternative, have the effect of making?
Let me tell you what kind of effect it had on the Democratic candidate for governor. He stopped campaigning. A month prior to the election, to take care of his mother who was in the hospital.
But did it have the effect of opening the Democratic Party to for them to
you open,
they make Mexican Americans a little more welcome in the Democratic
you
Party?
You open because you feel threatened. If the cat felt
now
like
you,
he could
take... You're saying that the assessment was that there were no threat.
Mm-hmm. No threat at all. If the governor would have felt threatened at all, he wouldn't have quit campaigning 3 goddamn weeks before the election. You know, if he feels comfortable and safe enough to stay home 3 weeks prior to the election, that third party don't mean shit. It don't mean a damn thing. As a matter of fact, the governor and the conservative element of this community, including Lloyd Benson, benefited from that third party. And if I was in the governor's position, I would have given that third party. Or if I was in Lloyd Benson's position, I would have given that third party $20,000 or $30,000 to run their goddamn campaign.
Where did they get their money?
I don't know. We're working on that right now. We're trying to find out.
Do they draw off a significant number of political activists from your side? They don't? Where do they come from?
They draw off... Here's what they draw off from us. They draw votes from us. They draw delegates from
us. They don't draw talent?
They draw our young talent, the college kids. Most of the people that ran the campaign here in town were college kids. Most of their workers were college kids. And those were people that were working with us prior to this thing. So that's where that talent came from. That we lost. Now, you know, they did a hell of a job until they got right close to election day and got right close to doing the things that are really important about an election, and it just fell apart. Just completely fell apart. And it was the fact that they hadn't developed to that point.
You think they got money from CREEP?
Knowing the political process and the finances of the political process, I would imagine they did. Hell, if I'd have been in the Republicans' position, if I'd have been in Briscoe's position, or if I'd have been in Benson's position, hell, this was advantageous as hell for Benson. I mean, Benson is scared like hell about what we're going to do to him at the next convention. He's worried as hell. It would kill him to lose the favorite son nomination. He would get his ass beat if he couldn't carry his own state in the convention process. So that, you know, politically and the way things go, I would say that, hell yeah, they got money for it. Now, proving it's another thing. Tired. But this last time around, Benson knew and Briscoe knew that they couldn't, you know, that nobody could come close to him in winning that damn election. And if they were looking for the future, if they were looking at 75, then their best thing was to get as many of the goddamn crazy liberals to vote over in that third party thing.
Is there any active working relationship between the Brown Caucus and Rudy Flores and the governor's office?
Okay, now the conservative and the moderate end of it, hell yeah, hold on. Yeah, they cater to Rudy a whole lot.
Is that where the input comes, and so far as appointments of Mexican Americans to boards and commissions and so forth?
That's where most of it comes from.
Any of the people have you recommended anybody?
No, for two reasons. One, I haven't really cared that much about doing that. And two, if I do it, I'll probably get what I want, but I'll have to give something in 75. And I'm not going to give anything in 75. I'm not going to give a damn thing in 75. 75 is going to be the other way around. See, and, you know, I've been asked for input about these Board of Regents, University of Texas and Texas A&M. But I don't have a damn thing to do with that. I've got my power now in the legislature. I've got my power in that I'm one of two or three Chicanos that's supporting the guy that's going to get elected Speaker of the House. You know, I'm one of those young guys that's tied into the new Speaker of the House. The rest of them have isolated themselves from the new Speaker of the House. That's where my power comes from. That's where my, you know, the things that I need done out here are going to get done. Most of the power on the local level, as far as Chicago is concerned, here in the county and here in the city, has for some reason just maybe by default come to me. And most of the stuff that I've wanted done, most of the things that I need help on, I get it taken care of on the local level. So that, you know, even if I were asked for input, I wouldn't give it.
Why do you support Clayton?
Because I needed that power. See, in Texas politics, and as far as the speaker's race is concerned, you got this many liberals and moderates put together that'll hang with a candidate. And then you got this many left-wing liberals. I mean, some liberal liberals. And then you got this many conservatives. This totals to about 70, maybe 72, and this totals to about 56, and this is the rest. Now see, these guys are used to saying, well shit, these guys are going to fall in with us. They're not going to go with that guy. You see, we found out, us 20 guys over here found out, shit, we're the balance of power in this state when it comes to the speaker's race. Okay, we go with this son of a bitch and we get him to 72. That's a liberal. Who's he going to cut his deal with? He's going to cut his deal with seven conservatives. He's going to sit down with seven conservatives and say, well, you know, what do y'all want? What do you need? What do you have in order to come with me? See, and we just, you know, toe the line and fall in place. And the kind of programs and the kinds of things that we want done don't get done. We just took these 20 votes and went over here and said, we'll make the Speaker of the House. And we did that. Took him from close to 60 votes over the 77 votes he needed to win. And we did that, and I did it because the 10 moderate to conservative Chicanos were sitting here. And they were going to be the ones that would say, we need money in Corpus Christi. We need programs in South Texas. We need to move in this direction. They're not there anymore. They're out in the cold now. That's why I voted for Clayton.
Any specific promises from him?
Mm-mm. It's against the law for him to promise me anything.
Just that you feel then you're assured of
being the one that when it comes time to sit down and talk about who he should talk to in our community about what's happening, what kind of programs we need taken care of in our communities, who's going to be chairman of different committees, who's going to sit on what committees. He's going to talk to me and Gonzalo.
What committee do you want?
Is Gonzalo part of that too? Gonzalo was part of that Clayton thing too. The young guys. You know, we got our ass burned over it, man. Because Carlos Truon and Matt Garcia and Bob Bell, and those folks were close to the old statewide groups, the LULACs, the GI4. They went right to the leadership and said, look, these son of a bitches are supporting a right-wing conservative bastard that's against bilingual education, that's going to kill our people. They didn't pass the word to their organization. During my campaign, I got more heat over that. And even now, I'm still getting heat over that. yet. The national vice president, LULAC, a guy named Tony Bonilla out of Corpus Christi, only a week and a half ago met with Billy Clayton. Because, you know, they also are at a point where they know that Billy Clayton's won. He's got 110 votes. They sat down with him about a week and a half ago and made a commitment of money to his campaign. And what I call that was a flank on the flank. On our flank, didn't work, but he tried to do it. We got so much flack over that Billy Clayton thing that was the worst thing that I ran into throughout the campaign.
And well, when did you arrive?
I didn't become vindictive about the whole damn thing. I got to the point where, you know, power that I got as far as, you know, as far as that speaker's thing was concerned, was one where, you know, I was going to use it to try and influence the legislation, influence the direction of committees. And I was in a position where I was going to say, well, hell, then, you know, it don't matter who the county chairman is of committee, of whatever committee you want to appoint to. You do it on you know, on any way you want to do it. You do it on seniority or whatever. And, you know, I was willing to let one of them be the Chicano chairman in the committees in the legislature. Hell, right now, no way in hell because of all the heat that they've put on me. You know, I'm to the point where I'm going to cut their ass a couple of times and let them understand what they did to me, what they did to the other guys that I got to support Clay.
Was this done in a caucus before or after the election?
What's that?
Your decision to help support Clayton for the speaker.
It was before the election, before the general election, yeah. Real good issue in my campaign. And I was supporting racist, redneck, and...
How'd you deal with that?
Same way I dealt with it with you. You know, it was over who's going to get the power as far as the legislature's concerned, over whether the $12 or $15 million of state monies that went into Chicano programs are going to go to Corpus Christi or whether they're going to come into my district. Whether part of them is going to come into my district, into this city. People can understand that real easy. Very effective, too. Hell yeah, I'm supporting a guy that's ultra-conservative and considered by some a racist or redneck son of a bitch. I didn't have a damn thing to do with speaker's politics. Because when the issues are out on the floor, the issues are going to be liberal or conservative, and you're going to support them over that. What the speaker's race determines of is the kind of committee appointments you're going to get, the kind of appropriations that are going to go in your direction. But I got a number of the young Chicanos to support Clay, who I hope are going to be in a very good position.
How do you assess Briscoe?
He's a do-nothing, know-nothing governor. He knows absolutely nothing about what the fuck's going on in this state. He's a rancher that was born into money, was filthy rich, had enough money to buy the governorship in Texas. As far as political programs, as far as legislative packages, legislative programs, he hadn't got any. At all. And the only reason I supported him, the only reason I supported him was because he was a Democratic candidate and because I wanted delegate strength in our precincts in 75. Because I think 75, the 75 convention is going to determine to a great extent the direction that the state politics is going to go in the future. He's real weak. Hell, I venture to say if you sit down to talk to him about what the hell such and such agency is supposed to be doing and even who's running, I venture to say that after 2 years in office, he wouldn't know. He knows very little about politics. I did a whole lot of work in redistricting. I spent about 3 years in drawing the redistricting plans on the congressional level and on the state level in Texas so that they would benefit Chicanos. And I sat down to talk to him about their appeal at one time. He knew no more about where the court was at on that than the regular guy on the street. You know, every time I talked to him about the court and what the three-judge panel was doing, you know, his aide would have to answer for him. He really is uninformed, and it's just a damn Southern title for him. He's a goddamn Southern gentleman. That's all he is. He ain't a damn bit of political brains at all. He's got a lot of money. In Texas, that's the way you get elected statewide. He's having a lot of money. Like your PR firm is selling you, you're on your way. Just like Benson got elected. That's about it. The only way I could assist the guy, he hadn't done a damn thing as far as school finance, you know, something that's affected. Hell, majority of the children in this state, no initiative at all about straightening that shit out. The Utilities Commission, regulating utilities, he done shit, nothing, not at all. I don't think he knows what to do, it's a problem. He's got powerful position to be in. Child care. Absolutely nothing at all. You know, things that, hell, that affect everybody in the state. The damn energy crisis, the only thing that he could come up with was slowing the damn speed limit to 55. So, nothing creative, nothing informed about him or anything at all. Just a know-nothing, do-nothing kind of guy. Got a lot of money. A lot of good money. The only good thing about him, I think, is the fact that he opposed, and he still opposes, the old comedy machine in the state. He's kind of an independent Democrat. Independent conservative Democrat. So that when he beat Ben Barnes and Preston Smith and the other guys, he beat the comedy machine. He beat the folks that in power since comedy and Shivers and all the rest of those guys. You know. He was kind of the independent conservative Democrat. And he's been kicking comedy's people out of positions of power ever since he got in. The most recent one, of course, Frank Irwin, was Board of Regents, University of Texas, and was on his way out. Now, I guess that's the only plus I could get. This kid had no real problems in school. Nothing everything has just really stayed the same. Most of the reform, as far as the legislature was concerned, the last session was on the part of the speaker at that time, and he didn't do that much. The governor had nothing to do at all with passing the legislation. And when it became controversial, hell, he just stayed out of it completely. Didn't do anything about it. Wouldn't have done anything about it.
How are judges elected in Texas? Mainly.
A lot of them are elected. But the way they're elected in this state is, the guy gets reelected, he resigns. Once he just gets tired of being a judge or is ready to retire, he runs that last time And right after he gets elected, he quits. And the governor appoints him, his replacement. That's the way it's done. It's been done like that all around the state. Supreme Court justice is the same way in the state. They quit after they get reelected, when they're ready to retire. And the governor appoints them. The governor is probably the most powerful man in the state, in as far as state government is concerned, in that he appoints all, well, he appoints a third of all the commissions and agencies that run the state. The state, because of the way the Constitution was written, is run by agencies and boards and commissions. It takes the governor 2 terms to come into full strength and full power, as far as the state's concerned. So that, you know, that may be the reason he hasn't done the things that I'd like to see him do. I think he'd do it without the commission's helping. I think if he'd have taken the initiative in school finance, hell, he could have taken that and just run it all over the state and gotten a good finance plan.
That's likely to be a big issue next session, right? School finance.
Yeah. That's probably going to, that and Utilities Commission is going to be the biggest things around. Shit, they're going to get what they want, though. Utilities companies are going to get what they want. All companies and the landowners are going to get what they want when it comes to school finance. We might in the school finance do some tax reform. And the only reason we do that, if we do that in the next legislative session, is because the farmers are being taxed at 100% now. And being taxed to the brim as far as the property is concerned. And the rich folks in the cities aren't paying taxes on their wealth, on a high percentage of their wealth. So that the only way that we might be able to do it is through a coalition between Lux Browns and the conservative ranchers. No, I think we covered most of the stuff. I guess the big thing that, you know, that I emphasize not only with y'all but everywhere I've worked has been this new movement that's been directing itself to 75. I think in 75 we'll see, if not a complete liberal takeover of the Democratic Party, not a complete liberal takeover, you'll see us in a very good position within the party. Hopefully a position we can.
Is there going to be
usually
a real active effort then to elect delegates to the national convention who are Annie Benson delegates?
The state convention. We don't want him to get the favorite son thing. We think we can beat him by doing that. We think we can beat his. He'll lose a lot of credibility throughout the country if we can cut him up here on the state level. And that's a hell of a thing to be saying, because he's done a hell of a whole lot of homework, man. He just might kick our asses in whole, because he's done some remarkable things as far as organization is concerned. He's,
well, this will be in 75 or 76?
75. The conventions.
The 75 state convention, does the state convention elect delegates to the national convention in Texas? So, but the 75 state convention and elects the 76 delegates, 76 national convention delegates.
He's done a hell of a lot of work. He's really cut into the blacks and through Anthony Hall and bastards like that. He's cut into that. But I think that, hope the delegates, the
see through that kind of stuff. Hope they will. He's done some work, and I think he's probably going to get a lot of those damn conservative Chicano legislators or moderate Chicano legislators probably to help him, unless Castillo can turn that thing around. But it scares me, man. I don't see anybody. I don't see anybody on the national level coming out to take him on. It seems like he's just cut them all off. Hell, I thought Mondale was going to get it. No, Mondale dropped out. Jackson, can't go with Jackson. This guy, Udall, is that what his name is? Udall. He's coming from nowhere. I hear Harris is trying to get him there. He might be able to do it. The biggest one out there is Benson, and hell, 6 months ago, nobody even knew the bastard, other than people in Texas. So that, you know, we're taking on another one that looks like it's going to be a hell of a fight for us. Because he's got a lot of money.
And he's doing what he's doing because he's got a lot of money. Held a cocktail party for all the delegates.
Last week before last at the Rennie convention, cost him between 10 and 12 grand to hold a cocktail party. He's got that kind of money. I don't know, he might just beat the hell out of us. The right thing, of course, is to be looking at having it all together by 75. Hopefully turning that around.
Of course, I got that older sister has gone on, and she's got her PhD from Harvard in the School of Education, and I've gone on to go to the legislature, but I've yet to finish my undergraduate work.
And you and your sister both were in mentally retarded classes.
Yeah, in the third grade. Yeah, I have a brother that was kicked out of school 7 different times before he was in the 9th grade, and then finally expelled for good in the 9th grade. And he owns a brokerage firm, an import firm, an export firm, and a trucking company. And his income, his yearly income, is close to $250,000. I have another brother, a younger brother, the same way. Spent 7th and 8th and 9th grade in and out of school, been kicked in and out of school. I went to reform school, the whole bit. He runs the brokerage business airport office, and they do business with biggest accounts of Shell Oil, Tenneco, Texas Instruments, all the big companies in town. He grosses about $85,000-$90,000 a year there. And he never went past the 9th grade. We were lucky to graduate. But the older sister's gone. Get a PhD from Harvard. Hopefully I can get it from there too someday. But I have a hard time because of that background. And when I got out of the Marine Corps, I had a hard time getting into the University of Houston because of that. When I went to the Texas Southern, same thing. Somehow they go back to your records, or for some reason they do that, and that's a bad mark against you. And when I went applied for the graduate school, I thought it was going to slow me up. They were pretty good about it. They got those records and all that stuff, but they still let me in, even without finishing the undergraduate work. I really have a hard time now. Really been put into kind of a box myself because I can relate to the kind of stuff they're doing on the undergraduate level. Just, you know, I go to a political science class and they're talking about the structure of state government, you know, and I knew that kind of stuff when I was in the 7th and 8th grade. I knew more about that when I was in the 9th grade. So I've always kind of been inclined to government. And I have a real problem with that because I go to class once or twice a month, and I automatically get the professors and other folks pissed off at me about not coming to class. I have a hard time staying in undergraduate school because this doesn't relate to anything.
And interview with Ben Reyes. No more transcription of this tape.